This is SPM Media. SPM Radio with SPM's very own Cobra. The hottest thing in the billiards industry, bringing you the most up-to-date interviews with professionals.
Came to this country in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. Jeanette Lee didn't start playing until, I'm thinking, 93.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. So, again, I mean, now let's go back to the guys. You've mentioned this guy over and over again, Mr. Alan Hopkins. I'm 52 years old, and I know there are a lot of guys that are going to be younger than me listening to this podcast. So can you give me a talk about him and who he was and what he did?
Well, first of all, Alan was a great player, as evidenced by him being in the BCA Hall of Fame, the Straight Hall of Fame, the One Pocket Hall of Fame.
Great.
He's probably one of the best all-around players of my generation.
Yes, ma'am.
Nick Varner is another one.
Yes, ma'am.
Who was very accomplished in
incredible.
All games.
Kentucky. Kentucky Colonel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Alan is a different person today than he was when I was coming up.
Okay.
He was always friendly to me. You know, hi, how you doing? But, you know, that's pretty much it. You have to remember that in those days, most of the guys made their living gambling.
Yes, ma'am.
Tournaments were a sideshow.
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, pretty much. Until the later 80s, early 90s. Alan's a couple of years older than I am. He was one of the few very good players from the Northeast that went on the road.
Okay, all right.
You know, most of the other guys, they stayed home.
Mm-hmm.
Ray Martin had a pool room in Clifton, New Jersey. Miserac was teaching and had mm-hmm. was partners in a pool room in Metuchen. Pete Margot had a pool room in Staten Island. I don't know what Siegel was doing. I know he was on the road with Hubbard for a little while. But you know, Alan was out of all the players, he was the gambler. And then of course mm-hmm. Jimmy Fusco
okay.
was from Philly was a great player also.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going down to Boulevard Athletic Club in Philadelphia to watch Alan and Jimmy play one pocket all weekend.
Wow. Okay.
They'd take turns. They would
mm-hmm.
They'd play one time Jimmy's home court, and then the next time they played, it would be an Allen's home court. So I got to watch, a lot of that.
You mentioned Mr. Steve Miserac. I mean, now, I remember, mm-hmm. I don't know exactly how old I was. I don't know if it was the 70s or early 80s. You'd see some trick pool or something like that on the show. That's incredible, if you remember that a long time ago. But I saw mm-hmm. a Budweiser commercial. I think it was a Budweiser commercial. And
Miller
it was
Lite.
Steve... Miller Lite. I'm so sorry. Okay, it was a Miller Lite commercial. That's right. And it was him going, even when you're just showing off. When I saw mm-hmm. that, when I saw that trick shot and seen him pick that up, I was hooked. I had to learn how to. That was when it was like, this is what I want to do. I want to learn how to play pool. What was he like? Did you get to know him a little bit personally, or was it just in passing by?
Well, you have to remember that when I lived in North Jersey, I was a young player coming up.
Okay.
You know, not young so much as age-wise.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like in karate belt. Yes.
Uh-huh. But, yeah, I was young in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd heard about all these people that played real well, and to be honest with you, I was in awe.
Yes.
You know,
uh-huh.
I mean, I was very shy around these people, and I'd say hello to them, and, you know, but most of them, you know, they really had nothing, you know, to say to me either, you know. And, it's just they were around, you know, but I was one of the women or maybe the only one, that would run around all the time, going from pool room to pool room. And,
yes.
You know, by this time, you know, I was playing $2 night ball.
Yes, yes, yes.
So, you know, I didn't really get to know Steve until later.
Okay.
After he had moved to Florida and I had moved out west.
Okay, yes,
and ma'am. And then my mother retired to South Florida, so whenever I went down to see her, I'd call Steve and Karen, and we'd go out and have dinner. And,
okay, yes, ma'am.
So, and that's when we really got to know each other.
Was there a lot of money in it way back then? Because, again, when you're sitting at home and you're watching this stuff on TV or you're seeing them on commercials, you just assume that all these guys were rich. I mean, was there a ridiculous amount of money way back then in pool?
No.
Okay, all right.
Mike Siegel was ranked number one.
Mm-hmm.
Mike and I are the same age. He's a month older than I am.
Yes, ma'am.
He was ranked number one in 1993, and he quit playing. He said he made $100,000 in the past year and had nothing to show for it. Because expenses ate everything up.
Yeah, so so it's not like you just get to put your prize money in the bank. You had to still spend money on traveling all around and preparing. And then
that's
at the same time, you probably
gambled.
Yeah, yeah.
Or
and
had
at
their
the
pool
same
room.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. So at the same time, I'm just thinking you probably still have to take your family with you if they're going to be with you, or you're still having to send money back. So I didn't really think about it like that. But you just assume that if people are on TV, they're automatically making a ridiculous amount of money. And that's just something from a, you know, from an at-home fan, you know, that was watching it.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're not alone. You're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that we did have some pretty healthy first prize money tournaments. Ricky Florence had a few in the early 80s at Caesars Tahoe and Caesars in Vegas, where the first prize was $30,000. I remember Earl won $30,000 and a car.
Oh, my goodness.
When he won the tournament. Oh, by the way, that final match was against Mizorak, and that was the first time ESPN, the fledgling ESPN, showed a pool match.
Wow, okay. Okay.
But my point is that how many $30,000 tournaments first prize do you see today?
I understand that. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Exactly. Yes, ma'am.
You know, I mean, mm-hmm. it's 40 years later. You know, if you went in today's money, what the $30,000 is worth, it'd be a whole hell of a lot more than even in the larger events where the first prize is, that Matchroom puts on, first prize is 50. So I think, unfortunately, let's put it this way. Like a lot of players of my generation, we had a dream that, you know, we could get there and make money like other sports, but it is what it is.
Hey, you, business owners. This is Sneaky Pete Mafia Radio, the hottest thing in the billiards industry and the best place to advertise. With an average of 7,500 new readers each week, you will reach your audience. Contact us at 1-805-440-3167 for details, or go to SneakyPeteMafia.com and sign up.
What I did want to ask is sponsors. I mean, did a lot of these guys have sponsors that kind of helped you along the way?
Yes and no. A lot of them, like, for example, Mucci Q's. Mucci Q's, you know, had a stable of players. And most of these people didn't get anything from Mucci except for a bunch of Q's that they could sell.
Oh, okay.
There were a few people, like John and probably Jim Rempe, that, got cash. I know for a fact that Laurie John was paid in cash, and she had insurance, and you know. But most of them just, or they just, you know, had a Q sponsor.
Yes.
Earl was lucky. He signed up with Q-Tech, and they took good care of him.
Mm-hmm.
Allison Fisher, later, she signed up with Q-Tech. But again, today, most of the players, they have product sponsors.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
you know. Well, then, I'll give you a cue and you endorse me.
Okay,
you know?
Well, then going back to the Budweiser thing, how did Steve end up getting that deal? Do you have any idea how that happened?
Yeah, I know exactly how it happened. Miller Lite approached the PPPA, the Professional Pool Players Association, which was an organization started in the New York area.
Yes, ma'am.
And they went to the board, and they wanted a pool player, and they were going to pay $10,000 for this commercial.
Wow, okay.
And so anyway, these four guys decided not to tell their membership about this. They just decided they would all go to the audition themselves.
Okay.
So they made a deal that the winner would get $4,000, and the remaining three would get $2,000 apiece.
Okay.
They were Alan Hopkins, Ray Martin, Pete Margo, and Steve Misurak.
Yes, ma'am.
And the rest is history.
Yes.
Steve got his $4,000 and rocketed to international fame, and the rest is history.
Well, let me ask you this. What was the hardest thing for you to learn coming up? I mean, I think, you know, if it was, you know, you had said that you were a natural when you first got in the game and you started getting better as you, you know, as you played. What was the hardest thing for you to, you know, to get past? Was there a stumbling block for you to get past that took you a little while and then you did it?
I was a slow starter, which is fine if you're playing for money, because as long as your money holds out or the person stays there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can get your stroke. But race to seven or race to nine, you know, I was almost always stuck, you know, three or four games, and then, you know, before I could get going. So I think that might have been my biggest impediment.
You know, when I was coming up, I remember getting a VHS, and it was Nick Varner, it was Jimmy Renfrey, Pretty Boy Floyd, and Mike Siegel, and it was kind of a how to play pool VHS, and that was what really did it for me. You know, now I wanted to ask the question about some of the guys. You mentioned Nick Varner. Can you tell a little bit more about Mr. Nick Varner? Because to me, he was an incredible player when I saw him play. And really, they said that he was real good in all the games.
Yes, he was. Bank pool, one pocket, straight pool, and then the BCA Hall of Fame.
Okay.
He's from Kentucky. I first saw him play in 76, I think.
Yes, ma'am.
77. Little skinny guy. but boy, could he play. He's probably the hardest working pool player of my generation. I mean,
wow.
He travels constantly with his cues and, you know. 1989 was Nick's year. He won almost everything that year.
Wow.
Everybody else is second.
I want to meet him so bad. He's somebody that I'm wanting to interview and get a chance to meet. Another guy you had mentioned, Jimmy Rippey. What was he like and what did he do in the game?
Oh, he was a great player. He won a lot of tournaments before I even started playing. He was a very good player. I didn't really know him very well, even though he was from Scranton, because I, like I say, in those days I was shy. I was in awe, you know.
I understand that.
Other than saying hello, you know, I didn't really have much to say to these people. But Jimmy has always been a very strong player, and like I say, he started winning tournaments in the late 60s, early 70s. And, you know, rang up a string of them.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Another guy that I want to go and get a chance to hopefully meet or interview. Now, another dude, let's go on and mention Pretty Boy Floyd, Jimmy Mattia. I mean, what was that guy like? I've heard him as a commentator for AccuStats, and you spend a lot of time cracking up listening to him whenever he's doing commentating. What was he like?
The first time I ever saw Jimmy, again, was in New York City. I think it was 77. And he was running around with Larry Lascotti and Louis Roberts.
Okay.
And you know they were all very young, good. You know, they were like late 20s.
Okay.
You know, and young, good-looking guys, and you know, throwing around a lot of money.
Uh-huh.
And but I never really saw Jimmy play his best. His best was before I came on the scene.
Yes, ma'am. Okay.
You know, in the early 70s and so on and so forth. And then he met Ava, mm-hmm. and they got married. And so for a while, he and Ava, you know, for about, I don't know, 7-8 years, were a fixture at all the tournaments. But mm-hmm. I would like to say I was a lot more friendly with Ava than Jimmy, although Jimmy was always, you know, very personable and, mm-hmm. and friendly to me.
One thing about it is just incredible to get the history lesson. I mean, it was just so many great players and at that time. And I think that it's really incredible you being there and, you know, just right there in the middle of it. Even rather it be in awe as a fan or as a player, I think that it was really incredible then. At what time did you retire and go into saying, hey, look, it's time for me to start doing other things?
It was the middle of 99.
Okay.
I was in Detroit, mm-hmm. and it was a Saturday afternoon, and, you know, there's nobody around, you know?
Mm, okay,
geez, you know, so I went back to the hotel, and I was laying on my bed, flipping channels, looking, and I'm thinking to myself, I don't even do this at home. What are you doing? Anyway, so I went back to the tournament and told the girls that this was going to be my last one, and they all said, oh, you know, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. Anyway, but it was, you know, I just, it stopped being fun.
Yeah, I understand that. I understand that. Well, let me ask you this. At what point did you decide to make the move to become a commentator?
That was kind of thrust upon me.
Okay.
The first time I did it was with Upstate Al. I went up, I met Sherry Stauch up there, and she needed somebody to help run her booth, you know, because she had a lot of meetings and stuff. So anyway, they had the tournament in the back. And so anyway, I wandered back there, and a couple of people that I know from the old days, my old days there, Devil Dave and a couple other guys, hey, man. Anyway, so I sat down, and so that was probably, I think that was the first time I ever did anything mm-hmm. like that.
Yes, ma'am.
And then Daniel Bush gave me a chance to mm-hmm. Work with Robert LeBlanc and Jimmy Mathias.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But most of my commentary has been with Ray Hansen's Pool Action mm-hmm. TV.
Big Truck, he's from Waco.
And, mm-hmm, yep. And so anyway, I do mostly rotation commentary
yes,
for
ma'am.
Him.
And I mean, the thing about it that I like, even when I first heard you, I mean, it's like the ability to kind of talk through the play, to be able to kind of tell what they're going to do a little bit before they do it. You're educating us as we watch people play, and that helps us, you know, we amateurs, to get a lot better, you know, even being able to tell us what we need to look out for and, you know, stuff like that. So that's what got me interested in getting a chance to meet you. So, like I said, it's really been a great history lesson today, and I really do appreciate you taking out the time to, you know, educate us on this. Now, one other thing that I did want to say, this is on Skype, so this is mainly audio, but you have a lot of great pictures of a lot of old school players, old school matches. Your Facebook page is an education of pool, and hopefully, you know, I'm wanting to get, you know, you to share some of those with me, or allow me to be able to share some with some of the listeners, so that they can be able to see some of these people that you've mentioned, because you know, every day you have somebody else that's on there that I'm almost wanting to ask questions about all of these players, because there are people like Grady Matthews that a lot of people don't know of, Bugs Rucker, Chicago Bugs. You know, of course, Steve Mizrak, we mentioned him, but there are a lot of players that have passed on that you have pictures of them that I would love to get a history lesson about them, too. Do you understand?
Well, here's what I would suggest.
Mm-hmm.
I'm halfway through my 63rd photo album.
Oh, okay.
Each one of them has 200 photos in it.
Wow.
So just go to my page, mm-hmm. go to photos, click on albums, and mm-hmm. obviously number one is the first one, and that's basically, those are the photos that I had on the walls of my pool room.
That is beautiful. Beautiful.
What I would do if I were you is mm-hmm. if you see something you like, share it to your page.
Yes, ma'am. I appreciate that. Yes, ma'am. Well, I sure will.
And
I think that's going to be really...
And then we can talk about it.
That's great. Well, like I said, I'm looking to get another one and another one with you, because what I'm hopefully going to do is get a couple of those pictures. I might say, well, who is he to, you know, present a story and do it ahead of time to give you a little bit of time to get, you know, get what you have to say about him. But my goal is that I know that there are a lot of people that love this game as much as I do. But I think that we also need to be educated, because a lot of young players, they know about Shane, they know about Scott Woodward, they know about Justin Bergman, but if you mention Chicago Bugs, if you mention Grady Matthews, people are like going, who? So, you know, I want to make sure that...
You know, not to interrupt, but I'm going to.
Yes, ma'am.
The thing that really astounds me about young players today is that most of them, not all, but most of them, really are not interested in the players of yesteryear. I remember when I came up, not only did I revere all of these people like Irving Crane and Luther Lassiter and, you know, all the legends of the game that they
before, ma'am.
But, you know, and I don't see that with the younger crowd. And, you know, I don't, it confounds me.
Yes, ma'am.
That, you know, when I post pictures of the old timers, it's mostly old timers that comment on them.
Well, I tell you this, I know one thing that I'm going to do is I want to be a bridge to that if I can. I mean, you know, again, you keep doing what you're doing because there are people that care. And you keep on putting those pictures up, you keep on doing it. And I tell you this, you know, we're going to do everything we can to promote it. If I fell in love with pool at this level from those great guys that you have talked about, then I know that if more people could find out their story and learn more, they may fall in love too, I hope. Because they're really missing out if they don't know about some of these things. Because I tell you this, when, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s, wow, I mean, these guys were like heroes. I mean, so, but I do appreciate you taking out the time to at least tell some of those stories. It was incredible. I think that not only do you know good barbecue, but you know a lot about the game, and you know. And I just want to let you know that you're loved, and that we appreciate you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you thinking of me.
Okay. Well, look, like I said, this is going to be it for today. This is Robert Barnes of SPM Radio. I mean, look, I believe in my heart that the only way that we're going to go up to that next level of pool is that we need to know some of the stories from the past, and that's one thing that I want to present on this podcast. At the exact same time, it was great to be able to talk with you, to be able to talk about commentating, to be able to talk about your story, and at least this is a way to introduce you to the crowd, and I'm really hoping to get another interview or two in there with you. And we're going to go through those pictures, we're going to upload, I'm going to share as many things as I can. I'm telling you this, if anybody that's listening has any questions, make sure and email me at cobrakarate@gmail.com. And like I said, I want to go on and have questions ready for the next interview. But Mary, I want to tell you this, I really had a great time interviewing you today. I want to thank you for your time and everything for this great history lesson.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right.
Take care.
You know it. I'll talk to you a little bit later.
Bye.
You take care. Bye-bye.